Hey folks, just a quick message before we start. We will be switching our hosting site in the near future. We're jumping ship from SoundCloud, as many of you may know the reason why. We will follow with more info, but we just wanted y'all to have a heads up before, you know, anything is planned. We just want to give you a little bit of warning that we will be switching.
Hey everyone, welcome to Dungeon Casters, the Dungeon Master Advice Show for Rookie DMs by Rookie DMs.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Ben.
And we're here to make your next campaign.
The Governor of California.
Who is your podcast and what does he do?
This week on Dungeon Casters, we're going to be starting kind of a block we wanted to do of mini-sodes. So shorter episodes on the different classes available to characters to start, and also how to use them as a DM, because these kind of classes do come up also as archetypes for your enemies. So it's good information to have. So first of all, we're going to be talking about the Barbarian.
Always fun.
I've not played one, you've not played one, but we've had players who have played them before.
Yes.
I remember my players more from like 3.5, so it's not the same Barbarian, but you know,
yeah.
a similar theme at least. You've had a more recent Barbarian, so in your opinion, what's the basic functionality of a Barbarian?
So, like, that's the thing, is, like, you have the Barbarian as this archetype, as the, like, fur loincloth meathead buff boy who's just, like, coming in to just juice and rage and smash.
I'm going to say fur-lined buff boy might be the next character I make.
Oh, man. But, like, I think there is definitely more to the class than that. It works as a good frontline fighter. That is its major functionality. Is the frontline fighter, the damage sponge, the it draws the aggro. It is, you know, he is always going to be your vanguard in combat.
Right. You know, they have the highest hit dice.
Mm-hmm.
They'll, all things considered, you know, averages applying, have the most health points of anybody in the party.
Yeah.
They have unarmored defense. They're good with shields. Yeah. They can use just about, you know, any heavy-hitting weapon the book can give you.
Exactly.
They have rage, which boosts their damage sometimes, you know, in certain conditions.
And damage resistance.
Damage resistances are high, and as you get into certain one of the subclasses, actually, both of the subclasses give you a lot of options for damage resistances.
Mm-hmm.
So, if your players want someone who is going to give a lot of damage, get a lot of damage, and still somehow remain standing after it all, the Barbarian is a good class for them. Also, it's among the more simple classes. It's one of the simplest classes in the game. And so if you have a new player, oftentimes they'll be given Barbarians. Don't shoehorn them if they don't want to play Barbarian.
Yeah.
Don't. But if they're looking for something that just, like, I don't want to be able to have to keep track of a lot of things, the Barbarian's a good start.
Yeah, I feel like it bears a quick pause with the whole idea of the shoehorning, is that, like, a lot of times, especially when you have an experienced party with a new player, there'll be this desire to be like, oh, good, this person doesn't have a preference, so we'll give them the class to fill out our party.
Yeah.
Or, worst-case scenario, we'll give them the class that we want. And the reason I say worst-case scenario is I actually have a story. A friend of mine, who she swore off D&D after playing it one time, because she shows up to a boyfriend's game with all him and his friends. They already have her character role. They have her rolling a seductress.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, oh, no, I kind of want to be like a thief or a rogue or something. They're like, no, you're going to be a seductress. There was one other woman in the party also playing a seductress.
Oh, God.
And they began to enact these fantasies where the DM was trying to get her to seduce other PCs in front of her boyfriend. It was this, like, weird alpha nerd, like, fantasy power dynamic stuff. It was really fucked up. So, like, shoehorning is something that, as a DM, GM, whatever, you gotta stay the fuck away from.
Yeah, and it might be tempting to do something like this, you know, give a new player an easy class, like Barbarian, I suppose, can be.
Yeah.
Avoid it. But what we really want to talk about more than anything else, because the fundamentals and the mechanics, they're available in the books, and there's a lot of other places where you can find this information. A lot of podcasts, a lot of YouTube series talk about, you know, all the differences, you know, between the subclasses and the mechanical benefits and multi-classing options and stuff like that. What we're more interested in, and as you probably have known by now, our value on player diversity and role-playing experience and playing against type and narrative is more important to us than certain mechanical elements of the game. That's just our preference. That's the way we like to play. You're obviously, you can disagree.
Yeah, that's fine. But
we want to give you a sense of some alternative choices you have when it comes to the Barbarian for both enemies and players, and how to diversify a class that otherwise doesn't seem to lend itself to a huge amount of diversity.
And that's the thing, is because at the end of the day, it is a combat class.
Yeah.
In regards to game mechanics, in regards to numbers and dice and skills on the sheet.
Yeah, you have a very limited skill list.
It's a combat class. It's something that functions well in combat, but that being said, like, you don't have to roleplay it as, you know, the fur-clad battle boy. Yeah, you don't have to be a battle boy.
The illiterate outlander.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, like, as we like, you know, flipping those tropes on their heads. So,
we
like,
do like it a lot.
The clearest, easiest, simplest, quickest option is the don't be a stupid barbarian. Because, like, in 3.5, there was a whole thing where barbarians don't have literacy.
Yeah.
If you were a barbarian.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, you spoke common, you could not read or write any language.
That's right.
And you had to take feats in order to write and read other languages and just, like, be literate, which was a ridiculous stipulation on a character. So, even if you don't have the high intelligence, because honestly, if you are building a barbarian, intelligence is going to be a dump stat.
In some cases, especially because your skill list is so limited, I don't think many of them, if any of them, are really intelligence-based. But I think that something like a high wisdom score suits them very well, because if you think about what the barbarians are based off of, you know, things like like warrior tribes, you have things like Vikings or Native Americans, Maori, Zulu, you know, all these kinds of tribes that were in the early stages of human civilization. And in many cases are still around.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that there's nothing stupid about the way they ran their culture. They were incredibly intelligent people with incredibly complicated systems, hyper-civilized in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And especially something like, they'd been around a long time, they'd seen a lot. They traveled the world in some cases, or at least they built up empires. You know, you think of like the Mongolians, I mean, they ran a huge part of this world for a long time.
Yeah,
and that's not a stupid group of people.
No.
So you think about the people who have traveled a lot, who know a lot of languages because they've traveled a lot, who just know how to, like, they're tacticians.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably, they're not illiterate.
No.
Well, certainly. So something like a high wisdom score, people who have seen a lot, people who know the difference between, you know, that sort of, you know, tomato is a fruit, tomato doesn't go in a fruit salad sort of thing.
Exactly.
I mean, they know tomato doesn't go in a fruit salad.
Well, and that's the thing, is that's like, especially with the nature side. So you have, you know, the classes can be divided into different kind of subgroups. And one subgroup idea that Ben and I have been playing with is the idea of the nature triangle, which is the three character classes that are most, you know, aligned with nature. And you have, on the spellcasting side of nature, you have the druid.
Mm-hmm.
On the skill jockey side of nature, you have the ranger. And then on the combat fighting side of nature, you have the barbarian.
Yeah.
Because you have in your skill list those nature skills. Yeah. You have the path option of the totem warrior, which is very nature spirit based.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you start taking on animalistic traits, physically speaking.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, you start getting different colored eyes and, like, your hair gets thicker and all these things. I mean, the book gives you a lot of options, or gives you some options. Let's say, like, gives you a number of options. And you become, you get the commune with nature spell. Some of your skills include, like, animal handling, nature knowledge.
Yeah.
In terms of martial users in nature, they're there. They're strongly situated in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
And that can't be ignored. I think that when I've seen barbarians, the sort of big, screamy, stupid, fighty, you know, sort of square-headed part of it gets pushed forward. And the part where, like, these people are considerate of landscape, they have nature knowledge. Knowledge. I mean, that really emphasizing
Like forestry and stuff like
forestry.
That.
That they're suited to survival. Survival's one of their skills.
Mm-hmm.
They're good at tracking. I mean, you know, ranger's your traditional tracker, but there's no reason a barbarian can't be just as good at it. And that's a wisdom score, I believe. It's a wisdom skill, I think. And
probably.
But you understand what we're saying here, that there's options. You can use those skills. Just because there's few of them doesn't mean they're any less valuable, and they can be used any less than another class who has skills. And so embrace that part of it. Likewise, I think it's perfectly acceptable, while it may be some work, to customize the shit out of the totem options if your player decides to take that route. Or if you want to use it as an enemy, even better. Use way more nefarious animals than are given. You know, the bear, the eagle, and the, what is it,
wolf.
The wolf. Yeah, they're classics, but, like, the shark barbarian, give it to me. I want to know.
See, well, that's the thing, is, like, one of our questions in the viewer question episode, and one of the questions I do get asked a lot by new DMs is, like, what can I change? What do I have leeway with? And this is a perfect example. If you have a player making a barbarian, their totem spirit can literally be any animal they want it to be.
Yeah.
You can alter the flavor to make it, you know, I wouldn't, you know, fuss with the skills and the numbers too much, but, like, you can kind of mix and match, and you can kind of fiddle around with it, because you can have, like, a pretty, like, the idea of the shark barbarian.
God, that sounds fucking cool, doesn't it?
That sounds so fucking cool. Like, especially, like, you know, minotaurs as a race are seafarers.
Yeah.
Like, a minotaur shark totem warrior sounds like a really cool guy.
That's fucking rock.
That sounds like that sounds like a sick anime. So, like, you do have all of these different options. You have...
Yeah, I mean, embrace... When you have a class that's as simple as this, be aware that also gives you... There's less, often, less ramifications for changes.
Yeah.
There's not as much as getting mussed with. You know, it's like, you change this to a wizard, you start saying, like, well, we're talking about all the schools, we're talking about spell loadouts. There's a huge balance sort of differential. Like, something like, you just really get rage and you get some bonuses to, like, defense and some pack tactic kind of stuff. You shift that around, you're not actually adding or subtracting all that much. And I think that because it's so simple, it's one of the primest territories for alteration. I would give them almost any animal they could think of, provided it didn't give them some, like, ludicrous benefit. I mean, even something like a dinosaur, I would even consider if it was tailored in enough.
Well, and that's the thing, is, like, you don't even have to change the stats for the changing the animal, because, like, you do Path of... If they like dinosaurs, you do Path of the Tyrannosaurus Rex, there's your Path of the Bear.
Yeah.
If you do Path of the Velociraptor, there's your Path of the Wolf, and then Path of...
For the Path of the Eagle, obviously the Path of the Ankylosaur, you know, the Stegosaurus.
Yeah, of course. And that's the thing, is, like, I think that, I mean, all that being said, I think that if your player wants to play the archetypal barbarian, if that's what interests them in the class, that's also fine. I don't mean anything I say here to be, like, pushing you away from what you want your character to be.
Yeah, if that's what you want, do it.
And that's the thing, I just think that this is, like, opening up more options. Because you're a barbarian does not mean you have to be the standard, you know...
Yeah, I think the name is very leading.
Exactly.
It's a very loaded name. Precisely. In a way that, like, cleric isn't exactly as loaded. You know, fighter doesn't, you know...
Like, yeah, fighter is a very general term.
Yeah.
Even something like rogue is like, yeah, the first thing people think of is a thief, but...
But then Han Solo's a rogue, and Han Solo's not, like, exactly... He was a smuggler, and he was kind of a good guy, and, like, you know, just somebody who stands outside of the norm is a rogue. You know, like, that's really open.
You do have a lot more leeway with these character classes.
Yeah.
And...
And I think in saying that, you want to consider that you can take a step back from, like, the flavor text and look at mechanically what happens, because, you know, the big one is rage. Barbarians get rage.
Yeah.
And that boosts their damage for a period of time, and they get it a certain number of times a day. But if you stay, like, it's not rage. What I'm getting is a temporary damage buff. Well, you say, like, well, any sort of martial way I can think of to imbue them with this is fine, because equally... And in a sense, this steps on the monk's flavor. You know, somebody who enters, like a war trance, like I think you said that to me previously.
I like that terminology more than rage so much. I like the idea of saying war trance as opposed to, war trance is the terminology I normally use for barbarian's rage, because I like it better. I think it fits, it opens up more ideals for roleplay, and it doesn't just make it, like, all of a sudden this person turns into the Hulk.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be the Hulk.
Yeah. And I think that when you consider other civilizations that began and sometimes flourished in sort of tribal societies that sometimes expanded sort of beyond the tribal.
Yeah.
You know, if you think of something like the Hashishans, you know, from Middle Eastern culture, you end up saying, like, well, there wasn't, like, a rage sort of in net, like, there was a rage theoretically, but, you know, and we understand this fact is kind of dubious, but, you know, go with us, that if somebody took some sort of psychotropic drug or something to put themselves there, it's not necessarily a rage as much as it's kind of like a just an altered state.
Yeah.
And then you don't get this sort of big, hulking, like, angry idiot.
Mongoloid.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you get to be, you know, like, your inhibitions are lowered and your fears are evaporated by, you know, the psychotropics or the war trance or whatever. And, like, I think along the same lines, going up the drug route, I have a interesting, like, I thought it would be interesting to play maybe a steampunk campaign, maybe not, but have a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde character and have them be a barbarian and have their rages be taking that, you know, sorette or syringe or whatever of the, like, alchemical whatever that makes them, like, big old buff boy.
Yeah, so absolutely.
You can play, like, a very refined aristocratic character who uses, like,
some sort of extra normal mean to get to that state. And then you'd mentioned before we began recording, Kylo Ren from Star Wars, the new Star Wars was somebody.
Kylo Ren, I honestly, I don't bring him up because I believe that if he were a character type, he would be a barbarian. But I believe that he is an option, his character type is an option in regards to a barbarian because he is a, skilled, depending on your view of how the movie went, but, like, he's a skilled warrior with a temper.
Mm-hmm.
And he loses that temper and that causes an influx of power, but a decrease in, like, lateral thinking and a decrease in logic.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that you can really lean into with that. And so, like, maybe you're, you know, a bar brawler who sees red a lot and all of a sudden, like, you just hit that rage and there's nothing stopping you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's so many fun things you can do with a backstory to give yourself
honestly,
a reason.
I actually considered this with our previous campaign. There was a reason that never came up, but I was going to give one of our players the ability to almost hit a barbarian rage, or they'd have their normal stats, and they were more dex, you know, less physical combat, I think more in, like, the sort of mental arena. But I was going to give them this option that part of their character could become, I would drop their mental abilities and shoot up their physical ones.
Okay.
And there'd be, like, a trade-off. And it would be, like, you wouldn't be out of control necessarily, but your understanding of yourself would radically shift in a moment. So, in this case, magically speaking.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing. Like, a barbarian who enters a state because of magical means. I mean, in D&D, you can do this kind of shit. I mean,
exactly.
Like, easy.
It's a fantasy world. You make it all up.
You know, you have somebody who, you actually have a character, Ashby, who you've not really gotten to play, who doesn't go into a barbarian state, but has two distinct sets of mentality that kind of one takes over the other. It's kind of like that old, you know, kind of like folksy psychology, you know, split personality or something, where a trauma caused this person to develop, like, a second persona that sometimes takes over.
And yeah, Ashby is a warlock who's eventually going to multiclass into a rogue, and he is my, I've had a constant mission in my life to make the main character of Dishonored, Corvo, as a D&D character,
right.
And Ashby is the closest embodiment I've been able to play, but, and we'll get more into, we'll probably talk more about him in the Warlock episode, because Warlocks are a really fun class, and I think they're so cool. But, like, I think that is also another option, though, that magical means, that traumatic event. There's so many things, and I'm pretty sure it's gotta be one of the Sherlock reboots, or one of the Sherlock Holmes spin-offs, or something like that I've watched, because I watched all of them, but, like, where there's a character who had, like, honest multiple personalities, and one of them was the murderer, and the other ones weren't, and they didn't know, and so that can be another thing, like, you know, dropping cognizance. There's another role-playing game that we've played with a little bit called Numenera, and they have a class, or a race that you can be that's two creatures creating a symbiotic relationship, and one is essentially a hyper, like, a more intelligent ape, and one is, like, a hyper sentient fungus, and when they bond together, they have, like, fungus mode where they're, like, super intellectual, they have fugue state in between where they're just kind of neutral, and then they have, like, ape mode where they're, like, you know, raging barbarians.
Yeah, you can think about something like Bane from Batman, who's brilliant.
Yeah.
A scientist.
Yeah.
A well-respected, very talented scientist. And they, you know, with a push of the button, you have like this big, who doesn't lose a huge amount of his intelligence, if I understand correctly, but is enormous, extremely strong, loses some dexterity in the process because he's like a meatball.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can have something like that. I'm really interested in the idea of a barbarian as a tactician. I know that steps on the fighter's feet a little bit with that, with like the warlord battle master, kind of battle master thing. But I think just in a role-playing sense and how you can use your skills and the way you might be able to interact with the world, you know, if your stats are there, there's no reason you can't compete and say like, you know, I think I hate the idea of people getting stuck. People who are smarter than that character just being like, I just can't say it. My character's too fucking stupid. And you know, sometimes that's fun and sometimes it's frustrating. And I think the idea that a barbarian wouldn't know necessarily everything, wouldn't be like incredibly book learned in some cases, but the idea that the person wouldn't be able to reason out anything, especially something that like warfare, which is something they would have a lot of experience with,
exactly,
they would be very smart.
So yeah,
and in that realm, and I think it's worth considering, you know, looking at those skills and recognizing that like nature's there. They might know like a lot about nature, and they have like a very sort of in sync relationship with nature. And the idea that they could interact at some level with the arcane spirit of nature, is interesting. I think it's worth pursuing.
It's very much so. And also, you have that trope that of people learning deep truths from nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think we talked about before, like, maybe, yeah, you keep intelligence as your dump stat, but you don't ignore wisdom.
Yeah.
And I think that's certainly a part of it. I think that, you know, the rage sage...
that's a good name for it.
Yeah, the barbarian sage, the idea that, like... Or even, like, you know, I know there's the peaceful monk Unearthed Arcana now, but, like, even that kind of idea where he is... for all intents and purposes, a pacifist. He doesn't want, you know, to fight.
Yeah.
But when pushed, he becomes will. This very, very, like, incredible fighter.
Yeah, yeah, for, like, a couple turns, it's just a death sentence to be near this character. And I think, too, you want to consider why a barbarian would go into a rage. Because I think it's very easy to go into, like, a combat, it's like, I enter a rage. Because, like, you're going to get the bonuses.
Yeah.
And that's fine, and that's the mechanical benefit, and it's there for that convenience, exactly. Yeah. But I think if you want to talk about RP a little bit, a barbarian who only rages under specific circumstances is an interesting character pursue.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
You know, when are they willing to let themselves go? And I think maybe pushing a little bit of, like, narrative deficit when they enter a rage, because they start to lose control a little bit. It's not necessarily attractive to the people around them. It can off-put certain individuals.
Yeah.
I think they may want to have that under control to some degree, and why they go into a rage. Are they very nature-oriented? Is that what did it? Did somebody specific get hurt? Is there some, you know, injustice they can't stand for? You know, all kinds of little things. I think it's worth considering why you would use that ability. Same as you would pick, why does a cleric pick a domain?
Yeah.
Why do you use the rage? You know, if you use it all the time, yes.
Why are you so mad, man?
So I think that might wrap it up for our mini-episode here.
Well, there's one more point I want to make really quick. I got one more thing to talk about. And that is, we briefly brushed on it a couple times, but races. I know a lot of people think that certain races, it's not a lot of people think this is true. Certain races synergize with certain classes.
Yes.
There are class and race combinations that are very functional.
Yeah, the half-orc barbarian's a classic.
The half-orc barbarian, dragonborn barbarians work well, the Goliath barbarian.
Sure, of course.
Like, those barbarians work well. That's true. There's no denying that. But, like, at the same time, like, it can be fun to play a different kind of barbarian.
Yeah, I would be very curious what the elf barbarian looks like.
The elf barbarian? I think that's where war trance comes in, that more, you know, spiritual side of combat.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, I mean, I've been fussing with a character for a while that's a halfling giant slayer.
Oh, sure.
And I want them to be a barbarian. The only problem is they're a ranged class, and barbarians, that's one major, like, limitation you can't get around. Barbarians are not ranged classes.
Yeah.
They can use ranged weapons, they can attack, but
there's
no reason.
You have to put an incredible amount of effort in to get it to work, and then it's really not going to work as well as you want it to anyway.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's your little stipulation. But I think, like, a halfling barbarian can be fun. I think you were saying something before about no kneecap being safe.
Yeah, there's a YouTube series called WebMDM, and one of the the people talked about they had a halfling, a barbarian whose kind of motto was, you know, no shins were safe.
Yeah.
And it can work,
it's
you know,
fun.
Especially when you get into leveling with it.
Yeah.
You get so the player character gets so powerful at some point that like kind of who they started at is doesn't matter as much anymore. You know, as long as that stat is in a solid place, you're going to do a shitload of damage regardless.
Yeah.
It stops mattering the higher up you get. At least I think. So, are you good?
Yeah, I think.
Okay, I think we're good.
I think that'll cover it.
I jumped the gun, but now
we're ready to finish up and. We're going to apologize in advance in case the audio's we're a little softer than usual. We're using our...
NPR voice.
Yeah, we're using our NPR and Vocal Fry heavy voices today just because we're recording at Ben's house and his parents are upstairs asleep and we don't want to, you know, be inconsiderate. But on that note, if you have any more questions about our NPR voices or barbarians or anything else you need D&D-wise, you can always... just go ahead and shoot us an email at dungeoncasterspodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, or send us a tweet at dungeon_casters. We might answer your question in an episode, but we'll definitely try to get you an immediate response, person to person, if nothing else.
Yeah, and hey, Ben.
Yeah.
Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
Just because it's a mini-sode doesn't mean I'm not doing this. Hey, Ben.
Okay, I thought I might get out of it. Okay, yes. What?
Do you ever hear the one about the Goliath?
I don't think that I have.
Oh, that joke's way over your head.
Okay, yeah. It's a tall joke.
And News Sting by Kevin McLeod of Accompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons.